to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Greg Jennings is joining us this morning.
That is a fantastic looking suit.
I try to live up to expectations around here.
Well, appreciate that.
That is a medium bar to. No, I'm just joking.
You look great, Greg. Good to see you this morning.
Nice to see you, Nick Wright. We're going to start with that Chiefs-Chargers game from last night. Let's dive right in. It was Monday Night Football, this one from down in Mexico City, and we're going to pick up the game in the third quarter. Patrick Mahomes finds his tight end Travis Kelce. It's a 23-yard touchdown. Kelce had 7 catches, 92 yards on the night. 23 seconds left to play. Chargers with a chance to tie it here. Phillip Rivers looking for Austin Eckler. That is picked off. For Rivers, 4th interception of the night. 14th on this season, trailing only Jameis Winston at this point in that department. Chiefs defense coming up big on a night where their offense looked kind of small. So let's jump right into this. Nick, I'll start with you. You more or you less confident in the Chiefs after what you saw last night in that win?
I felt better about the Chiefs after last week's horrifying loss than I did after this week's nice win. And by nice win, I mean only because they stay in first place in the division. They once again continue a dominance over the AFC West that is really only rivaled by, as far as inter-division dominance, the Patriots and the AFC East. The Chiefs are now 24-3 in the division over the last 5 years. That's well before Patrick Mahomes got there. They have run roughshod over the AFC West. So that part you feel good about. You feel good that once again, Patrick Mahomes' leg did not appear to be hampering him at all. In fact, he had a season-high rushing yards in this game, and his best plays were made with his legs. But if they played a competent team last night, they'd have lost. I mean, that's the reality on the ground in from Mexico City. It was a miracle the Chargers didn't score a touchdown in the first half. It was a minor miracle that they abandoned the running game, which was so effective, and that they put the game on Phillip Rivers at this point, shoulder that is not a shoulder it once was. And so Kansas City got the win. They got to the bye. They have as late a bye as you can have in the league, which if you can survive the first 11 weeks without a bye, which all the Chiefs really did survive, it can be a good time to get healthy. Tyreek Hill got hurt in this game. Both running backs got hurt in this game. Mahomes clearly could use a little extra time. But for a team that going into the year, I picked to win the Super Bowl, what they've looked like really, since the first month of football, has not been a team that should be the favorite to win the Super Bowl. And last night, Greg, it's tough because you're happy you get a divisional win. It would have been a terrible loss after last week's heartbreaking loss. But they didn't play very well on either side of the ball except for forcing critical turnovers time in, time out against Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, the positive about last night's game is that the Chiefs did get a win. However, I am less confident the more I watch this team, simply because of how they perform as a team. When we look at or we think about the Kansas City Chiefs, we automatically go to the offensive side of the ball and Patrick Mahomes and his ability to be magical, to make plays, more plays than necessary for them to have the outcome that they desire.
Along with all the weapons they had at all the skill positions and the speed and all of it.
But saying that and looking at that, when we talk about the teams that are at the upper echelon of the National Football League, let's just focus on the AFC. This team lacks what they lacked last year even more this year. Defense. When you I have a hard time like pinpointing it because they have skilled guys, they have quality guys on that side of the ball that are just not getting it done. And when you're trying to accomplish more than what you did last year, which is move forward to making the Super Bowl, because you're in the AFC Championship game, you have to make strides in these areas, specifically defensively. You mentioned last night the Chargers and Phillip Rivers allowed them to win that game. Mm-hmm. Because they could have run the ball with Melvin Gordon at will.
And they didn't.
And they did not do it. I don't know why they stopped running the ball. Even with the 4 interceptions that Phillip Rivers threw, they still had a chance at the end of the game to make it happen and get the game to overtime.
And by the way, or to potentially win it in regulation. Last year, this game was eerily similar to the game the Chiefs lost last year that put the one seed in doubt to the Chargers. Chiefs were up 14 late in that game. They weren't able to run their four-minute offense to put the game away, they being Kansas City. Chargers score. Chiefs go three and out. They score again, and they went for two for a walk-off victory that was at Arrowhead, if I'm not mistaken. Last night, the Chargers down 15. They score a touchdown. They go for two early. If they would have scored on that final play, the one Sorensen pick, I think they would have gone for two again, and I don't know that I have faith Kansas City could have stopped it. But real quick here on, to me, the most concerning part of it is not the defense, because the Chiefs' defense is going to be something that is a work in progress at best, particularly run defense all year, but their inability to ice the game on offense. They had the ball four times after the Chargers cut it to seven. Those four drives ended in four punts. They had the ball twice where multiple first downs would have ended the football game, Jenna. And each of those times, they were unable to do that. That if the Chiefs are going to be a one-way team, that one-way's got to be going 100 miles an hour, and last night the offense was not.
Hang on. You guys are already, we've been saying all season, worried about their defense. That's been the worry coming in. That's the concern right now. Are you both now concerned about their offense as well? At least forget, take injuries out of it. I mean, well, I guess you can't really take injury with Hill hurt and with Patrick Mahomes still coming back. Are you both worried about their offense?
Well, for me, I look at their offense, and it definitely doesn't look like it did last year. And for a number of reasons. Number one, starting with Patrick Mahomes, him being in and out because of injury, him obviously, he will not be 100% for the remainder of the season. That's just not going to happen. He's still going to play phenomenal. He's still going to look great. He's still going to make those throws that we've seen him make. But his not being 100% and not having the weapons like Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, and Kelce on the field at the same time, all the time, that's going to shoot them in the foot in the long run. When I look at why they look so great, it's because of a guy like Tyreek Hill that can stay on the field, and you have to account. You can't play man-to-man against the Chiefs with Tyreek Hill on the football field. You cannot do it. And so that changes the landscape of how you approach and attack teams offensively, and I just didn't see them making the proper adjustments last night, because you went into a game thinking that you were going to have all three of your guys for one of the very few times that we've seen.
Right, Tyreek Hill got hurt in week one of the season, and then by the time he came back, Mahomes was hurt. They played a full game together last week. Tyreek was fantastic, and Mahomes was fantastic, even though they lost. Then he got hurt in this game.
It was a shoulder injury,
and then it was a hamstring this week. I'm not worried about the Chiefs' offense holistically. Big picture. Last year, they scored at least 25 points every single game. This year, last night, was the third time that didn't happen. However, the first two times, you look at the Mahomes was dealing with the ankle injury. The most recent time, last night, Tyreek Hill goes out of the game early. Where I'm worried about the offense has more to do with your old friend Andy Reid and situational football. They lost that Titans game because they could not pick up a first down at the end that would have prevented any of the field goal chicanery that happened. Last night, Philip Rivers threw what should have been the game-losing interception, his third interception, and they just needed two first downs. They got one. They seemed in the moment to not realize, wait, because of the timeouts and the two-minute warning, if we don't get another one, the Chargers are going to get the ball back with plenty of time. They went into a shell offensively the way you would do if we don't pick up a first down, there'll be 20 seconds left, not two full minutes. To me, that was poor play calling, poor coaching. That wasn't on Mahomes in the passing game. The Mahomes in the passing game weren't given an opportunity to ice the game there, similar to the Titans game at the very end when they forced what should have been the game-ending play, stopping them on 4th-and-17. And so it took another Phillip Rivers interception to finally end this football game. So they got a lot to work on in the bye week.
Right.
Now what they have going for them is they played, there's two teams ahead of them in the AFC. You've got the Ravens, who they beat last year and this year, and the Patriots, who they played as close as anybody played all year last year. And so I still think the Chiefs' upside is win the championship. But their downside is lose a game you've got to have to a 4-7 Charger team, which they damn near did last night.
Are you ready? ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. Back here, first things first, we're talking New England Patriots. So Tom Brady admitted yesterday that he's frustrated with the offense. He wishes the Patriots could score more points. Nick, just to give you some context, Pats have scored 3 touchdowns in their last 2 games. They are 25th right now in the red zone. These are not numbers that we ever use to describe the New England Patriots. Not this year, probably not last year, although we saw we're getting close to it. You think that their offense holds them back from winning a Super Bowl this year? Well, because you can't pin anything on that defense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl. And at this point, I don't think they're going to get to the Super Bowl. And it wouldn't be on the defense. Certainly ain't going to put it on Bill Belichick. So what's the other options? We going to blame their third kicker? Now, by the way, not having Gostkowski has been to their detriment this season. But yes, I believe I think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. I don't think they're going to get to the Super Bowl. And at the end of the year, I think we're going to say, why didn't they? And it's going to be because the offense is not good enough. And the Patriot fans, you don't have to listen to me. Take Tom Brady's word for it. Tom Brady, at every opportunity, is expressing his concern and his frustration with the offense's lack of ability to sustain drives and to put up anywhere close to the level of production he's been used to.
And himself not excluded, because about it as a whole.
I'm sure he understands he is the most important part of the offense, but Brady is a great teammate. One of the best teammates we've ever seen in any sport. He also knows he is not playing with a full deck, so to speak. The offensive line injuries, the lack of consistent wide receiver play aside from Edelman, and a disappointing Sony Michel season, a guy they spent a first-round pick on last year. By the way, a pick or two ahead of where Lamar Jackson was taken, but let's not talk about that right now. It's not all on Brady, but Brady has not been able to, year 20 in the NFL, and at age 42, he has not been able to be the tide that lifts all boats. So to me, Greg, the answer is yes. Yes, the Patriots offense as a whole, Tom Brady is the leader of that offense, is going to prevent the Patriots from doing something only the Buffalo Bills have ever done, which is make it to 4 straight Super Bowls, much less win 3 out of 4.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think the Patriots offense this year is going to be enough. And why I say it's not going to be enough is for every reason you pointed out. When you look at their personnel, and I get it, in years past, even last year, we've always talked and noticed that they have a lack of personnel when it comes to skill position guys. They've always been that way. That's been their approach. They get what they get, and it works because Tom Brady makes it work, because Josh McDaniel makes it work, because Bill Belichick and that defense makes it work. However, this year, what has worked in the past is not working. You mentioned Sony Michel. They haven't been able to sustain the run. They haven't even been able to start the run. They haven't been able to get those easy passes that Tom Brady has always been accustomed to with James White and Julian Edelman and so many other guys, Burkhead and these guys that fill in and step up and make plays when guys have been missing in and out of play or whatever the case may have been. And so when I look at that, however good their defense is playing, it is not going to be enough when you look at the offenses that they will end up facing in the playoffs that will put up points. So your offense is going to have to put the ball in the end zone. You can't continue to get away with just field goals and trying to win points by
win the,
games by
win
margin.
The way they did against Philly.
You can't. That's not
the way they beat Philly. The way they beat Buffalo. They've played three teams this year that right now are in either in the playoffs if they started today or a game out. Philly, Buffalo, and Baltimore. Baltimore beat them twice. Beat them to go up 17-0, getting the ball on the punt return, fumbled it. Then they had to go beat them all over again, and they did. Buffalo, they beat 16-10 before Josh Allen started taking care of the football in a game where the Buffalo quarterbacks had four turnovers, and they needed a block punt to win that game. And the Philly game, the Patriots needed a wide receiver pass touchdown, a two-point conversion, and even then, they still are facing a pass, Wentz's best pass of the night, into the end zone on 4th-and-10 to potentially tie the game, or I think Philly might have gone for two in that spot. And so that to me is not a path to victory that is sustainable over multiple playoff games against multiple quality opponents.
Here's why I'm not worried about the New England Patriots, because the one thing they do better than anyone else, including your Chiefs, which we just talked about, is play situational football. Nobody almost understands the game better. No one has the game won. We talked about this better than Bill Belichick before the game is even played. As far as out-scheming your opponent, preparing for your opponent, that along with your defense, isn't that enough to get them through at least
the regular season?
At 9-1?
Yes,
for them to be playing
season
as poorly as they are in the offense, you think that won't carry them through the postseason?
No, I don't. I really don't, because you got to think about just the history of the New England Patriots and what goes before them, what precedes them. Their reputation has always preceded them. And teams are just not afraid to play the New England Patriots. They're just not. And there's always been this little angst with teams going into Foxborough in January because of who? Tom Brady and what he provides in the playoffs. Now, I get it. He's a different player typically in the playoffs, and you don't have to be so great, but you just can't make mistakes. And he typically does not do that. But when I look at these teams and what they've always been afraid of or leery of is Tom Brady beating them. And I just don't see that being the case. Number one, because his ability has started to decline. And then you already don't have the personnel that's going to elevate and supplement what he's now lacking, which they did last year, Sony Michel.
And by the way, you saw the passing game start to deteriorate last season. But they had James Devlin at fullback. They had Gronk at tight end as not just a pass catcher, but as a blocker. Sony Michel was playing better, and they had a far more healthy offensive line. The offensive line has been decimated by injuries. I know they get Isaiah Wynn back, but he will effectively be a rookie left tackle playing his first NFL games. He might be an excellent player. An excellent prospect, but we got to see him actually play. There's plenty of guys who were first-round picks. Eric Flowers once upon a time was a first-round pick left tackle who ended up repeatedly showing he couldn't do it. I'm not assigning that to Isaiah Wynn, but he's as likely to be that as he is Joe Thomas. We don't know where on the spectrum he's going to fall. The lack of a fullback has hurt him, and I said it in the beginning, the kicker injury is a big one because the type of games they're trying to win, you need to have a reliable kicker. For the first time in a quarter century, they went a quarter century uninterrupted of what I would consider Hall of Fame level kickers. From 1994 to 2019, Vinatieri to Gostkowski, with I think 12 games where Gostkowski was injured a decade ago where they had replacement level kicking. But the other element is Brady. And I will tell the audience this, you don't have to go deep into the history books to find a very close facsimile for what we are seeing. Peyton Manning in 2013 won league MVP, and his team lost in the Super Bowl, but it wasn't on him. He was stupendous that year. In 2014, he was really, really good early in the season, fell off a bit at the end of the year, and in 2015, he added league best defense, and he was no longer the player he once was. They, by the way, won the Super Bowl anyway. Tom Brady in 2017 won league MVP, and his team lost in the Super Bowl. In 2018, he was good, not as good as he was in 2017, and they were a defense-dominated team that, by the way, ended up winning the damn Super Bowl in a 13-3 game against the Rams. In 2019, he is having the worst year since his first season in football. Now,
and the Patriots defense,
much like the Broncos. Broncos defense is carrying them throughout. Now, to be fair to Brady, Peyton Manning in 2015 was a bad quarterback.
Yes.
He was terrible.
He completely fell off.
He was 9 touchdowns, 17 picks, and a disaster. Nobody would say Tom Brady's been a disaster this year. But I don't think anybody accurately would say Tom Brady has been a markedly above average quarterback this season. And where Brady's been the worst, and this is a situation where, compared to his contemporaries in recent times and throughout the breadth of his prime, he was the best, is dealing with pressure. His MVP year, I think he had a 97 rating when pressured, which is elite. To have a quarterback rating above 90 when you're pressured is going to be near tops in football. This year, it's a 48 passer rating when pressured. The drop between pressured and not pressured passer rating, he and Dak Prescott, the two biggest discrepancies in football. And for Brady, it's a concern because when you do get to the postseason, are we convinced they are going to be able to keep Tom Brady upright? Are they going to be able to prevent Tom Brady from getting hit? And is Tom Brady going to do something in the postseason he has not yet done in the regular season, which is stare down the face of pressure and say, I know I'm going to get mollywopped here, but I'm going to deliver that strike. In the regular season, maybe, Greg, he's been just trying to keep himself healthy, and he will flip that switch in the postseason, but we're yet to see it even in big spots during the regular season.
I'm going to tell you, a switch that cannot be flipped is when you start feeling those hits as you get older. When I've watched Tom Brady this year make a couple of throws where he knew that contact was going to happen, and he threw and spent.
Yes.
And when you start seeing that in a quarterback, and again, this is Tom Brady. I understand he's the GOAT, mm-hmm. but present day, Tom Brady is not the GOAT as right now playing at quarterback position. He is just an average quarterback that has elite savvy and smarts that is going to propel him to where he is and this team is. And so he's getting by with that.
I'm just going to say, I'm not jumping off the wagon
until the
band breaks up. It sounds like you both, he's been off for a little while.
Well, I'm just curious. If in the playoffs, if they play Baltimore, who's got the better quarterback? If they play Kansas City, who's got the better quarterback? If they play Houston, who's got the better quarterback? If they play Indy, listen, I'll give it to Brady. If they play Buffalo, I'll give it to Brady. But the teams they're going to have to beat to get to the Super Bowl, forget who they face in the Super Bowl. Who has the better quarterback?
Who has the better defense of all the teams that you just mentioned?
Well, the Patriots, which is the only reason they're in the conversation.
Exactly.
Well, last night, James Harden feasted on the Trailblazers, dropped 36 points to lead the Rockets to their 8th straight win. Nights like these are becoming standard fare for the Beard, almost to the point where we're no longer impressed. But Harden's teammate, Russell Westbrook, was and is and continues to be very impressed.
Amazing. I think that a lot of people like to normalize greatness when you see it over and over again, but it's not normal because there's nobody else that could do it. If it was normal, everybody would do it. And he's put himself in position to be able to be one of the best offensive scorers of all time because of the way he's able to score the ball at a high level in a variety of different ways. So. It's amazing. I'm just here to be able to help him along the way.
Nice to hear from Russ. Nick, has James Harden become underrated?
Absolutely. And Russ's comments were spot on. If it were easy, everyone would do it. Oh, anyone, if they took that number of shots and got that number of free throws, could do. Okay, then someone should go out and do it. they really should, because for James Harden, what it's led to is a league MVP, 3 runner-up finishes. If you add the Adidas money, right around his current contract, past contracts, Adidas money, $500 million in career earnings, and a scoring profile that is going to be matched in NBA history only by Wilt Chamberlain. That is the rarefied air in which he is breathing right now. Harden's last, he's had a slow start to the season. I think he had 29 and 19 first two games. That since then, here's all he's done. 40, 59, 36, 29, 44, 36, 42, 39, 47, 44, 49, and last night a slow night. 36 points per game. And by the way, the Rockets have the second best record in the Western Conference. And by the way, we didn't include assists because it'd be too much numbers. He's top 10 in the NBA in assists and top 5 in true shooting percentage. So he's doing it efficiently. Greg, we've never seen a perimeter player score at this volume in the history of the league. And the only player we've seen score at this volume in the history of the league at any position is a guy who they had to rewrite the record books for, Wilt Chamberlain. And here's why I think he's become underrated. He could average 40 a game this year. And no one, I'm not hearing anyone discuss him as the best player in basketball. People say LeBron still, Giannis. Some folks were erroneously saying Kawhi. Last week, I had a big argument. Is Harden better than Kawhi? It was considered a hot take that Harden's better than Kawhi. Harden been doing this for half a decade. Last year, averaged 36. This year, looks like he's going to do it again. And then some. That, to me, is the definition of an underrated player.
I wouldn't go as far as saying he's been underrated or he is underrated. He's definitely being underappreciated. And if you listen to what Russell Westbrook is saying, we become so enamored with what is his norm. And so James Harden's norm is now averaging almost 40 points a game, putting up 40 points a night. And so the kicker is, if guys in this league could do it, which other guys could do it, but would it equate to winning? And this is what's beneficial for the Houston Rockets, that James Harden produces numbers like this so that his team can win. And I don't think viewers or fans really understand that aspect of things. He's not only doing it because he has to, he's doing it because this is being what's asked of him so that his team could have success and be in contention in the latter parts of the season. So I love what James Harden has done. I think it becomes underappreciated because we start to see it night in and night out, the same way Russell Westbrook has been averaging a triple-double for the last 3 years. Exactly. We get numb to it and it becomes the norm. And it's like, he did that last night.
But does it take too much out of him when you get to the end of the season? Last year we talked about, we asked all season, is this sustainable? It turns out it was sustainable for him. Remember, he went on that insane stretch. It seems like he's doing it now. And I know he has Russ next to him. But doesn't this take away from whatever he has left in the postseason when he does this every
night? It might. And last year, obviously, the end of their season was an enormous disappointment to everyone involved in the organization. But last season, if he hadn't done it, they were 14th in the Western Conference, fifth of the way through the year. If he hadn't done it, they wouldn't have gotten to the end of the season. James Harden is doing it because it is what his team requires to be in the position they need to be in at the end of the postseason. Now, the ultimate knock on Harden is, well, you can't win playing this style of basketball. They haven't won a championship playing this style of basketball, but I would like to remind the audience, the first 2 years Kevin Durant was in Golden State, before year three when they were decimated by injury, they beat everyone they played in 5 games or less in the playoffs. Not only were the Rockets up 3-2 against them because of Harden before Chris Paul went down with the hamstring injury, in game 7, they were up 15 points. And at that moment, overwhelming favorites to win the NBA title, and then they missed 27 straight threes. Those were not all Harden. That's just unbelievable bad shooting luck. That's the only reason they haven't won a title this way. It's the only reason. They would have, with respect to LeBron, that was LeBron and the four-piece of paper Cavs team, they were not going to be able to handle those Rockets. So, yes, you can win a title like this. They just haven't won a title like this. And, Greg, if they do win a title at any point with Harden, then he all of a sudden starts to be discussed like Wilt Chamberlain, like one of the 20 greatest players of all time, who maybe didn't win as much as people thought he would, but got the ring to go along with the unimpeachable regular season statistical resume.
Jenna, you say, is this sustainable in the playoffs? And the reason why I think that it is because when you've trained to do something and you are now doing it over the course of a season, you have built up your body to endure what he's taking on. Another note, he takes the most free throws in all of the National Basketball Association, which affords him the opportunity to rest.
And he shoots
it at a high percentage. He's knocked down in 13 odd games, 68 three-point shots. His ability to not only get to the rack, but also rely and take that pressure off his body, that physical toll off his body, because of his ability to shoot the long jump shot, is paramount to why he's going to be able to sustain this level of ability.
Look, it's okay with Russ now. Let's see if Russ is totally fine with it and singing the same song in a couple months. All right, on to the Dallas Cowboys, coming off a win over Detroit last week. Dak Prescott walked away with the credit for that win, 444 passing yards, while Ezekiel Elliott once again took second fiddle. Hey, Dak is first in the NFL in passing yards. Zeke is eighth in rushing yards. Yesterday, an undisputed Hall of Fame running back, LaDainian Tomlinson, was asked what he thought about Zeke's lack of production.
Anytime you have a young quarterback, you got a young offense coordinator, you're going to want to try to uplift that young quarterback to be in the MVP race, right?
Okay.
And so naturally, you're not going to run the ball as much as you used to. You want to use all those weapons. They have massive weapons at the wide receiver position. Gallup has stepped up. Randall Cobb has stepped up. I love their receiving core.
That's a hot take right there. Nick, you worried Zeke doesn't get back on track this season, back to Zeke standards?
No. We are such prisoners of the moment. Zeke, as of, take away the last two games, his three games prior, he had 355 yards rushing and was averaging 5 yards per carry. Like, he was he's had a bad 2 weeks. And evidently you're not allowed that in the NFL anymore. Like, bad 2 weeks, he's washed, he's cooked, forget about it. And it should be noted, I believe part of Dak's success this season is defenses are still, now maybe they'll adjust because Dak's played at such a high level. They are still worried about stopping 21 first and foremost, which is opening things up for Dak.
Yeah.
And because Dak has played at such a high level and the passing game's been so effective, I wonder if teams now are going to have to start to adjust the other way, remove one of those defenders from the box to start giving help on the outside on either Cooper or Gallup, help on the inside to Cobb. And then you'll see Zeke eaten again. I don't think Zeke all of a sudden, between the middle of October and Halloween, lost his ability. I just think he's had a bad two football games that right now we want to assign it as, oh, is he not worth the money? Is he over the hill at year four? When everything we had seen from Zeke prior to two games ago yelled, he's one of the three best people in the world at what he does.
Yeah, I'm with you. He'll get right back to where we've seen him in years prior, in years past. What I don't like, and I respect LaDainian Tomlinson, I don't agree with at all that Kellen Moore and this staff is trying to promote Dak Prescott to MVP status. No. What they're doing is utilizing what has been working. But defenses, to your point, their number one responsibility in all of football is to stop the run. When you get into a defensive unit meeting and you hear a defensive coordinator start their conversation, men, we got to stop the run. We are going to make them one-dimensional. And what the Cowboys have always been able to do is run the football. And so it's going to be a challenge from night in to night out, from Sunday to Sunday, every time Ezekiel Elliott is in that backfield to run the ball. But when you look at last year through 10 games, he had 194 attempts.
Bless you.
He had 191 attempts, 953 yards. This year, 194 attempts, 833 yards, 7 touchdowns. So he's right where he was last year, and he rushed for 1,400 yards. He'll
coming
be okay.
Into this season, it was probably always, let's let Dak beat us. Well, Dak's starting to beat you now,
and now
so
we'll
you're going to have to give him a little bit.
Exactly.
Back here, first things first, we're joined by former Pro Bowl cornerback Brandon Flowers. Welcome
Whoa.
To the show, Brandon.
What's up, baby?
Nick, what's up, baby?
Nice to see you.
All right.
I'm not going to reach all the way over there, but it is great to have you here. All right, let's get into it. By now, we have all seen what happened at the end of that Browns-Steelers game between Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph. One of the ugliest brawls in recent memory. It resulted in multiple fines and suspensions. Myles Garrett was suspended indefinitely for his role. Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens said yesterday he's still standing by Garrett, still supports him. But former Browns offensive coordinator Todd Haley had this to say about the team's lack of discipline when he joined Adam Schein on SiriusXM Radio.
This, to me, this comes back to coaching. This falls squarely right on the head coach, because the head coach talks to every assistant coach, who then talk to their groups of players. And there's an old saying in coaching, you're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. And when I watch the Cleveland Browns, I see a lot of stuff being allowed to happen. Whether it's clown shoes, visors, whatever it may be, Myles Garrett hitting the quarterback low, hitting the quarterback in the head, it's happening too much. It's not just a fluke.
All right, Nick, give us a little context, a little where Todd Haley is coming from before you tell us if he's right.
Listen,
or not.
People should know that Todd was the offensive coordinator of the Browns last season. And I mentioned this the day after the Myles Garrett stuff happened, that there was a very interesting moment on Hard Knocks when Greg Williams, who was the defensive coordinator for the Browns at the time, before he gets elevated and Todd gets fired, they hit the quarterback late in practice.
In practice. Mm-hmm.
And Todd loses it.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And Todd and Greg go at it. And then that week in the preseason game, they end up losing the game because they can't get off the field because of a defensive penalty. And Hard Knocks cameras cut to Todd, who says, well, it's how we practice. That should, you know what I mean? We deserve to lose that way. And Brandon can speak to this better than I can, because I covered Todd and know Todd. Brandon actually played for him. This is Todd's philosophy, that what happens on the football field, especially from a obeying the rules standpoint, if you will, not just execution, but whether or not you're a sloppy football team, is a direct indictment or referendum on the head coach. I don't blame Freddie Kitchens for Myles Garrett going whack-a-mole on Mason Rudolph's head. But the bigger picture of for why Myles Garrett would have ever been in that situation, taking the quarterback to the ground late in a game that had been decided, the Browns being a heavily penalized team, the Browns being a team that, while I don't care about Odell's watch or shoes, certainly that would have been nipped in the bud, whether it's an issue or not, earlier in other organizations. I do think Todd is right that Freddie Kitchens was the substitute teacher that got elevated to school superintendent, and all of a sudden you got kids running roughshod over him in the hallway. Like, that does appear to be what's going on in Cleveland. So I think I can't blame Freddie for the specific ugly incident, but the lead up to it, I think, does fall at the feet of the head coach.
I think Ty Haley is semi-right. You have to have somewhere in the middle, because Ty Haley is a drill sergeant. We all know that. And Freddie Kitchens is a player's coach. With that personality that Cleveland has with Odell Beckham, they have loud personalities. So you can't be a drill sergeant, because you've seen what happened when Josh McDaniels went to Denver. If you're too rough on a big personality team, it can go all haywire. Nobody wants to listen. Everybody wants to do what they want to do. When it refers to clown shoes and visors, receivers, defensive backs, they the prima donnas on a team. Guys are going to wear the cleats that they want to wear, the visors that they want to wear. Sometimes we went into games playing for Todd Haley. If our cleats look nice and it wasn't a dress code, we'll say, hey, we're going to take the fine this week. I mean, I just like these cleats that we're going to take. So that's just have something on what the players want to do. And my thing with Freddie Kitchens isn't the discipline he have on the team. It's more about him being a coach and being too much of a player's coach. When Odell Beckham missed in a voluntary camp, he was on Odell Beckham's side, saying, hey, he'll get in the playbook. It is voluntary. Instead of saying, hey, he needs to be here, we would like for him to be acclimated with his team. His players need to know what kind of guy he is. He took Odell's side. So when you be too much of a player's coach, sometimes players feel that they can react and act a certain way on the field.
He's always taken the player's side, though, Greg. He's not condoning what Myles Garrett did, but we support him. We're behind him. And he's taking the player's side at every chance he could take.
Yeah, Brendan hit it right on the head. This is who Freddie Kitchens is. He's a player's coach. But as a player's coach, players tend to play for guys that are going to side with them. However, when I look at Todd Haley, you listen to him, and the first thing that jumps out is, man, this guy is a little bitter. But to your point, this is who he's always been.
Yeah.
He's a drill sergeant. He's a guy that this is how we practice, this is how we dress, this is what's necessary, this is why we win. And when you deal with personalities that you mentioned, you have to give and take somewhere.
Right.
And so when you're looking at Freddie Kitchens and you're looking at all this talent and all these personalities, you can't nitpick every single thing. And so what we saw translate on the football field with Myles Garrett, that is not a direct reflection of Freddie Kitchens. That is all solely on Myles Garrett. Now, them being one of the highest penalized teams and being undisciplined, that is where I agree with Todd Haley. Well, that is a direct reflection of Freddie Kitchens.
Listen, there are certainly some players, coaches, that get the absolute most out of their team and that are great coaches in this league. I would argue Andy Reid.
Yeah.
Andy Reid, which is, I think,
exactly
where you were going.
Exactly what I was
going to
ask about.
Jenna covered Andy Reid. This is how he's been at every step, which is he will put his arms around you. Mm-hmm. He will say, listen, I don't care what the outside noise is. We're here together. And, by the way, Andy Reid teams are not always the most buttoned-up teams.
Yeah.
The Chiefs have had issues with penalties. He's not a perfect coach by far. But you can see what schematic advantages he gives you.
Uh-huh.
You can say, here's why Andy Reid is a coach we want, even with some of the negatives that go along with not having the most buttoned up team. The problem for Freddie Kitchens is I've got a whole list of things in the ledger that say where he's a problem, and I'm yet to find anything in the positive. So it'd be one thing if, all right, they're heavily penalized and you had this ugly incident. But
Baker's playing lights out.
But
he was elevated for Baker. Mayfield and Baker's tremendous. He's right. You can't find something.
You can't find the argument for Freddie Kitchens. Like, there's an argument for the Tom Coughlin style of coaching. There's an argument for the player's coach style of coaching. There's an argument for a happy medium. But for any of those styles, you have to be bringing something to the table. And that's something I'm yet to see from Freddie Kitchens with this Browns team.
And the thing I don't agree with also with Freddie Kitchens is Odell Beckham wants the ball. And he actually comes to the media and says, we need to feed Odell Beckham the ball. You have Chubb running the ball. You have Landry. To me, he's a modern-day Hines Ward. He's going to do the dirty work. He's going to catch all the intermediate passes. You have a tight end that can beat one-on-one coverage. It's like, why do we need to feed Odell the ball? But that's too much of a player's coach, again, just going by what the players are saying, and I think it's starting to cause a distraction in the locker room.
Brandon, maybe if Odell came to OTAs, he would have gotten the ball more. I'm just saying. Nick Wright, you more or less confident in the Chiefs after last night's win?
You can't be more confident, or I can't be more confident. This is a team that a couple weeks ago I said I still believe is going to win the Super Bowl. And
still feel that way?
I still believe they can, but their last 2 weeks, last week they played better. They just invented a way to lose at the end of the game. But at least you said, okay, listen, who are the Chiefs going to be? A team that is going to be a dynamic offense, hold on for dear life and on defense, particularly if the opposing team has a great running game. So Tennessee's a tough matchup in that regard because Derrick Henry can run for 200 yards as he nearly did against Kansas City. Last night to me was a little more concerning even in victory because the defense, especially in the second half, did its job. The defense, the Chargers had the ball four times, down 7 points. And twice the Chiefs defense forced a punt, twice they got a Phillip Rivers interception. But the reason they had all those opportunities is because the offense, and this to me lies more on Andy Reid than anyone else, the situational play calling in the four-minute offense was much like the Titans game, non-existent. And if the Chiefs are going to go on a playoff run, it's going to be because not their defense gets a huge stop at the end of a game, but their offense prevents their defense from having to go on the field at the end of the game by getting multiple first downs and running out the clock. They were not able to do that last night, and that to me is far more concerning than Patrick Mahomes having his worst game of the year. Patrick Mahomes is the most talented player in football. You cannot convince me otherwise. He just had his first bad game of the season. That's an outlier event to me, but the offense's inability to prevent the Chargers from getting chance after chance, that was concerning because that's what happened at the end of the Titans game.
It's definitely less concerning. You know, especially with Tyreek Hill going out, that is what makes the Chiefs go. You know, Andy Reid offenses always have to have that deep threat. If they don't have the deep threat, they're not going to produce on offense. And what's the most concerning thing is they're not running the football this year. You know, they always have a running back in stable who can break the home run or at least get a 15-yard game here and there, and the offense just seems like it's wide open and you can't stop them. You know, Damian Williams, he's banged up. Shady McCoy has too many mouths. So Andy Reid is dealing with a weak running game right now. He doesn't have his home run threat. The defense, they looked okay because they're playing Phillip Rivers, who threw 7 interceptions in 2 games. Mm-hmm. I mean, once they play a quarterback who's not going to turn the ball over, it's going to be definitely concerning for this offense and this team. You know, if you get 4 turnovers and you have Patrick Mahomes, you should win by more than 7 points.
Yeah.
And that's the concerning thing about me. When you play a team with a great defense, a team that's not going to turn the ball over and you can't get it going because Tyreek Hill isn't stretching the field and you can't get a run game going, I mean, I'm looking at a first-round loss, if you ask me, with these tough playoff teams in the AFC.
I agree. I am literally less confident now in the Chiefs than I've ever been in the Chiefs, simply because when I look at them, they look different. They're not this unstoppable offense that we saw last year that can put up uber numbers. And then when you look at them defensively, they still have the same struggles. They can't stop the run. They're up and down in the pass game. You said it best yourself. When you've had 3 turnovers, not including the last play of the game,
yep.
When you've had 3 turnovers and you have Patrick Mahomes and you have that type of offense, you would expect for them to have put up more points and you would expect to be leading by more.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
For them to have been put in that situation and they created 3 turnovers and then a 4th to seal the game, it's not promising. I'm not excited about this Chiefs team, and I'm not confident in this Chiefs team.
Just real quick to follow up on that. Here is where I'm at right now with the Chiefs heading into their bye week, and they will play. I believe the Raiders are going to win this week, and they have the Jets, I think. So it'll be 7-4 Raiders against 7-4 Kansas City, where Kansas City can essentially salt away the division in a couple weeks because if they win, because they already beat the Raiders once. The Chiefs, I still believe, and I think the schedule proves it out, can beat anybody. The Chiefs, with all their issues, did beat Baltimore. With all their issues, beat Minnesota. With all their issues without Patrick Mahomes, were right there against Green Bay until a fumble late in the game ruined that game for him. But games like yesterday show, to your point, they also can be beaten by anybody. The Chargers are not good, and the Chargers could have won last night's game even after the first 3 turnovers. If they score a touchdown at the end there, I think they're going for 2 to try to win the game, and I have no faith in the Chiefs' ability to stop a 2-yard run. And that speaks to the first-round exit part of it. If the Chiefs win the division, but they don't get a bye, which right now it looks like they wouldn't, and they are facing the Bills or the Colts team who's already beaten them, or a Texans team who's already beaten them, a team that's just going to say, we're going to run it down your throat, would it be shocking if they're 1-0 in the postseason? No. Now, I also don't think it'd be shocking if they end up going to Baltimore and or New England and beating those teams, because the Chiefs' A game is still as good as anybody's in football, but they have shown the variance between their best game and their worst game is as big as any of the good teams in the league right now.
I think the Chargers left the Chiefs off the hook last night for not. When Tyreek Hill went out of the game, you run man coverage. You have a stud in Casey Hayward. Run man across the board and blitz Patty Mahomes. And they didn't do that. They let Patrick Mahomes hit Kelce in zones, hit the receivers in zones, where it's just like you're giving them passes and letting them get in rhythm. You have to suffocate these receivers and just send the house. And he wasn't having an off game. As you said, make them make tight throws last night. They gave these guys so many touchdown throws and so many key first down throws for just not adjusting when Tyreek Hill went out the field.
Well, Chargers have a number of issues, and it's going to start with their quarterback. 4 picks last night, 7 over the last 2 games, 14 this season. He's trailing only Jameis Winston in interceptions. Is it time for the Chargers to move on from 37, soon to be 38-year-old Phillip Rivers?
They were smart not giving him a contract extension. The only old quarterback, this Breeze didn't get a real extension. Brady didn't get a real extension. Eli didn't. Rivers didn't. The only one who did is Big Ben, and then his elbow popped, and which is why the Steelers might be stuck. It's clearly over for Phillip Rivers. I mean, you played with him, and I always wondered what it would be like to be a teammate of Phillip Rivers, because very, very rarely is anything his fault. It's a lot of yelling, a lot of whining, a lot of pointing and screaming at people, and in years past, that's okay because he was the best player on their offense year after year after year. He looks like a quarterback who in year 16 probably should look, which is a very limited quarterback at this point, who I don't know if the Chargers will have the stuff. If he wants to come back, and I would imagine he does, he's got damn near a dozen kids, he still can be like, I think he still wants to work. But if he does want to come back, I don't know if the Chargers will have the stomach to move on from him, but they absolutely should. Like, if Cam Newton's available, especially the Chargers trying to get a foothold in L.A. as far as the market share with the Rams, Cam Newton would be a great star as far as star quality to bring in. But I don't look at Phillip Rivers anymore as an above-average quarterback in the NFL.
I have to disagree. I think it's Phillip Rivers mentally, what he's doing on the field, that's putting the Chargers in a hole. I think he still have the tools to drive the ball downfield, but it's his decision-making. He's trying to force every throw, and that's what's hurting their team. And you mentioned Cam Newton. That would be a great guy to come in, but I just don't think the Chargers would want to make that move right now. With me putting my GM hat on right now, what I'll do if I was Anthony Lynn, I'll tell the head coach, mention in the press conference, hey, Tua's out for the rest of the year. Mention that you would love to have this guy on your roster. I know he's going to be out for the whole season. He might can't work out for the combine, but that'd be a guy that you can bring in, sign Phillip Rivers for 2 years, and just tell him, hold him accountable. You can't turn the ball over. I have Tua waiting in the wings, and that's still star power coming to L.A.
Like Rivers waited in the wings when Drew Brees.
With Drew Brees, I do the same exact thing.
But that would be a lot of guessing and maneuvering and shaking for them, the Chargers at this year, to be able to get Tua next year.
Yeah, you got to get rid of Phillip Rivers. You got to let him go. And there's no time like the present. When you look at a guy who's 37, 38 years old, and you talked about it, he's making the decisions that he's making.
That's been Phillip Rivers, though.
It has been, but it has not equated to any wins when it counts. And so when we're looking at what we're trying to become in our future as an organization, Phillip Rivers doesn't represent who we are and what we do. He has been a great stand-in right now for a pillar of what we've created and what we've established. But moving forward, you got to move on from Phillip Rivers and give somebody an opportunity to take your organization to the next level.
Contender or pretender, here we go. Last night, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs picked up a big division win over the Chargers. However, their offense wasn't as explosive as usual. Greg, are the Chiefs Super Bowl contenders or pretenders?
They're pretenders. When I look at the Chiefs across the board, defensively, we always talk about how poor they've played defensively, stopping the run, and even in the passing game. But offensively, they are just not the same team. Do they have the potential to be special? Yes, but with the ins and outs of this lineup and personnel, I don't see them going anywhere in the playoffs.
Pretenders.
I have to agree with Greg. The offense is facing an identity crisis right now. Patrick Mahomes isn't playing flawlessly as he was last year to just make things happen. They're going to be they're definitely a pretender.
At two, Brandon, I expect this from Greg.
Let him know he knows the culture.
Man, come on.
He knows the culture inside and out.
What is their identity right now?
Man, I can't believe I got to turn away from Brandon Flowers. They're still a contender. Who do they have to go through in the AFC? Baltimore?
Yes.
Who they already beat this season.
You keep saying that.
But they're playing.
The Baltimore team now and who they played.
Totally different team.
Then?
How?
Okay. Hey, the Browns beat them.
Okay.
So there you go.
Yep. All right.
Then.
Excellent point. They have to go through Baltimore and a very flawed Patriots team. I'm not saying they're locked to make the Super Bowl, but say they're not a contender. Y'all just some haters, man. Y'all anti-barbecue, anti-grape city haters.
Deshaun Watson and the Texans suffered an embarrassing 41-7 loss to the Ravens on Sunday. However, they would still be in the postseason if the playoffs started today. Greg, are the Texans Super Bowl contenders or pretenders?
I still think that they're contenders. When I look at this division and I look at who's leading the division, they're still right there with the Colts. They have a good defense that just has been playing up and down. You have Deshaun Watson. Obviously, they just played the Ravens. So the taste that we have from what we just experienced of the Houston Texans is not good. But this is a good football team.
I got to agree with Greg again. You know, the Texans are a balanced team. They're not going to be up. They're not going to be down. With Deshaun Watson, he's going to always have them in the game. They can either pull it out at the end or they might just lose by a couple points. This is a solid team. That's a well-balanced offense, attack through the air and on the ground. So I think they're definitely contenders.
As much as I love Deshaun Watson, he's the only thing I believe in on this football team. The Texans are more likely to miss the playoffs than they are to make it to the Super Bowl. So I say they're pretenders. They just lost to the Ravens. No shame in that. I think they're going to lose Thursday to the Colts, and then they have the Patriots the following week. They could be staring at 6-6. I don't trust their head coach. I don't trust their defense, especially now that J.J. Watt's out for the year.
That's the truth right there. You don't trust the head
coach. How could you? The head coach coach is a disaster. So they've got to be, to me, they have to be pretenders.
Moving on, since the calendar turned to October, Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings have been lights out, going 6-1. They're just a half game back of the Packers in the NFC North. Greg, the Vikings, are they Super Bowl contenders or pretenders?
This is a contender. When you look at them defensively, we know what they are. They are a stout defensive team on all three levels. Offensively, they can pass the ball. Kirk Cousins is having a really good year. And Dalvin Cook, he hasn't been mentioned in this MVP race. We've always been talking about Christian McCaffrey, but he has been phenomenal, not only just in the running game, but in the passing game as well. Contender.
I have to say they pretenders. The NFC is loaded with the Cowboys, the Packers, Seattle. Russ is always going to play Seattle football. I just feel like Kirk Cousins is going to eventually go back in the playoffs to game managing. He won't make enough big plays to win the big game against some horses in there.
Listen, I love their coach. I love their running game. I love their defense. I have been skeptical of their quarterback, but ever since Diggs demanded a trade and he was apologizing to Thielen, he has been sensational. I have got to elevate them to contenders. A couple weeks ago, we did the top 8 teams in football. I said 7 of them are contenders, and then the Vikings were not. I think the Vikings have elevated themselves into that class. 8-3 is 8-3. Great perseverance they showed this past week. Down 20-0, coming back and getting the victory. And by the way, still alive for the 2 seed in the NFC if Green Bay falters even just a bit. So they're on the fringes, but to me, they're a contender.
All right, Dak and the Cowboys. They lead the Eagles by a game in the NFC East. Dallas already beat Philly once this season. So, Greg, are the Cowboys Super Bowl contenders or pretenders?
This is a contender. Again, when I look at this team, I like, number one, where they are with their quarterback. Their quarterback has been lights out all year. Defensively is where I kind of question them, but what their offense has been able to do is been able to rise to the occasion. And then you look at their path and their division. They're going to win their division because we don't know who the Eagles are. This is a contender.
They're definitely a contender. And because of Dak Prescott, like Greg mentioned, this is the guy that can help the defense out by keeping the chains moving. And everybody is on Zeke right now because they're making Dak beat him. When the playoffs come and they're playing in cold weather, snowy weather, it's going to be ground and pound. They're going to go to a light box trying to stop Dak Prescott. And that's what Zeke will show who he is.
There's 5 teams in the NFC that have 8 wins. Then there's the teams in this pillow fight in the NFC East. The Cowboys are leading the pillow fight. But no, man, to me, they're clearly a pretender. The only reason they're a viable contender at all is because of the division in which they're in. That, you're not going to play any team from the division once the playoffs start if they get there. I'm not certain Philly doesn't catch them, but to me, this team has showed too many weaknesses throughout the year. You have a quarterback playing at a near MVP level, and you're 6-4 with some ugly losses. I got to call Dallas a Super Bowl pretender.
Just to recap, Greg, he's got everybody as a contender except the Chiefs.
Yes, correct. That is correct.
Yeah, man.
Chiefs. That's all right, man.
Is it time, Nick, for the Chargers to move on from Phillip Rivers, whether they do so or not?
Well, I mean, by time, we don't necessarily mean like
not right
13,
this second, but by next season.
By next season. It would be in their best interests. They were smart in not giving him a contract extension prior to this season, so they have the flexibility to move on from him if they'd like to. And I think all of us, media, football fans, maybe even players, have been tricked a bit by something unprecedented that's happening. It feels precedented because it's happening simultaneously. And that is Drew Brees and Tom Brady continuing excellence into late 30s, early 40s, as is in the case with Brady. Brady, we just talked about, is having a bad year, but at age 40, won league MVP. Last year was a top 10 quarterback. If you look at the last 40 years of NFL history, forget year 20. Guys that have been really good in year 16 or later, here's the list. Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, John Elway. That is the full list for year 16 or later. And so those, what do all those 5 guys have in common? Those are 5 of the 10 greatest quarterbacks ever. Brady, Brees, Elway, Favre, and Peyton Manning. So to expect, look around Phil Rivers' draft class, Greg. Eli Manning, benched, probably a couple years too late. Ben Roethlisberger, elbow popped. Philip Rivers, 7 picks in 2 games. The idea that we are just going to have, all of a sudden, 40's the new 30 in quarterbacking in the NFL. No, it's not. We might think that because Brady and Breeze have continued their excellence later than anyone could have expected. But for mere mortals, even if those mortals are Hall of Famers, some people would argue Eli, Ben, and Rivers are all Hall of Famers. Man, once you get past year 15, there is not a lot of precedent for continued excellent play at that position.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the soundbite really quick. Because I definitely believe you move on from Phillip Rivers. But listening to him, even in the soundbite, he didn't take full ownership of what was clearly his.
Right.
Like, and that bothers me when I listen to it. And even as a teammate, you have to understand there's 53 other guys in that locker room, 45 guys that dress for the game. And every one of those guys are expected to hold one another accountable. Specifically your quarterback, because he's looked at as the alpha and the leader in that locker room and on that football field. And when you get to a certain age and a certain sense of entitlement, you feel like I am the exception. I get it. I played bad. It won't happen again. Well, Phillip Rivers, it continues to happen. It's either he's phenomenal or he's terrible. And when you look at the landscape of what the Los Angeles Chargers are and what they want to be, Phillip Rivers is not in their future plans. He has not gotten them to any AFC championship wins, which would equate to Super Bowl appearances. And so if I've looked at his resume and I see his body of work, has he been great over the course of his time? Yes. But has he gotten us to where we desire to go? No. And so moving forward, I have to make a decision that may seem a little bit distasteful for fans, specifically our own, saying, let's move on. Let's move on from Phillip Rivers and decide to write a new chapter and get on with our quarterbacking position.
And listen, life comes at you fast. 2 weeks ago, the Chargers, despite no Derwin James all year, despite their excellent young kicker Michael Badgley being injured for the first half of the season, they were sitting there okay, 4-5, with games coming up against Oakland and Kansas City. Had they won those last two games, the team leading the AFC West would be the Los Angeles Chargers. They'd be 6-5. The Chiefs would be 6-5. Raiders would be 5-5. They had two divisional games upcoming in order to be able to control their own destiny. And it's not just that they lost. They lost directly because Rivers was terrible. They outplayed Kansas City last night. The Chiefs were very fortunate to get that win. He tried to turn the ball over seemingly every possession of the second half. He did turn it over twice, and the one touchdown drive, he threw a perfect pass to Honey Badger, who plays for the Chiefs.
Oh, my gosh.
And Honey Badger just dropped it. It was the terrible play by him, who had a great game. But and against the Raiders, he threw three picks. Right now, the only team in their division that you feel better about the Chargers quarterback situation than is Denver, and that's because Denver hasn't had a quarterback in a half decade. And so Tyrod Taylor's the backup. He's a more than capable backup. I would be in the Cam Newton market if the Carolina Panthers are going to make the mistake of moving on from him. Everyone is saying Chicago or Tennessee, and those make sense, but the Chargers also need an influx of star power, given that they're trying to get the eyeballs of Los Angeles and the football eyeballs away from the Rams, while the Rams are seemingly going downhill at the moment. So if Phillip Rivers is their quarterback next season, they will regret it. Now, he will be. I think they'll probably give him a one-year extension.
There's a sentimental pull for a guy, the same thing that we saw happened in New York with Eli Manning.
And it was a disaster for the Giants.
It was a disaster for the Giants.
And I think it's more than a sentimental pull. You have to be able to fill in and at least get that level of play that he's provided you and give yourself a chance, and I don't think you find that right.
I'm a big Tyrod Taylor fan. I loved what he did in Buffalo. I think he's more than capable, if given the chance, good coaching and a good team around him, to be able to do it again.
He certainly wouldn't turn the ball over 7 times
no.
in 2 weeks.
That you wouldn't turn the ball over. No, maybe you would.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.